Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Of the American Redoubt, Radio Free Redoubt. I'm your host, John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too, if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot. Thank you guys for being out there and tuning in. Thanks for listening yesterday on ACN, where we broadcast all across Eastern Washington in the American Redoubt, Northeast Oregon and North Idaho, and we stream around the world, like we're doing right now. ACN also has a new radio station they're adding to their Spokane and Coeur d'Alene, 96.5 FM, expanding, growing. That's their KTW station. Pretty cool. So we're reaching out there more and more every Saturday from 11 to noon Pacific time. We're doing a lot to get ready for Cascadia Rising and T-Rex. I will be doing the partisan radio while I'll be working on that late tonight so I can get that uploaded tomorrow with instructions for those who are new, saying, what do I do? What's T-Rex? I kind of get the idea, but I'm not really sure. Is there a guide for somebody who's never done this before and doesn't really know what to expect? Well, the information's out there. We're going to fill in some of the gaps for you. And, oh, we've got a lot of stuff going on. I'll be live streaming this week. We're going to judge by the volume of traffic and how well that scenario, that Cascadia Rising scenario, is going. If there's a lot of activity and flowing activity, we'll stay on the air as much as we can. If they just kind of shut it down and do it during the day, well, then we'll assess that when we get to it. But as long as there's news and information flowing that we can bring to you, then we'll stay streaming, live streaming at RadioFreeReadout.com, that Stream Monster player, which we'll have linked in several places for you to make that as easy to find as possible. Let's get into the news and commentary, which is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding, with all 10 books out, including the audiobooks. This is an interesting story in Switzerland. Going to international news. I believe I mentioned last week, Switzerland had a vote, a guaranteed basic income vote, which would have given everyone in the country $2,500 a month, about $2,563, 2,500 Swiss francs. They said no. 80% of the Swiss said, we don't think so. And the proponents, socialists, were saying that the idea of providing a basic income guarantee, or BIG, B-I-G, has held currency on the political left for decades. More recently, some libertarians, I don't know why they call them that, have also embraced the idea, seeing it as a cheaper, more efficient alternative to the current welfare state. And of course, they're arguing, look, we're already spending so much on welfare. What if we scrap the whole system and just cut everybody a check instead of giving them health care, medical, food, shelter, everything else? Just give them a check and let them spend it on whatever they want. They can save it. They can spend it. Oh, yeah. The majority of the Swiss people, though, don't buy into that argument. Instead, they're wary of the idea, believing it would cripple the Swiss economy by eliminating all motivation to work. And one economics professor at the Geneva Graduate Institute said, if you pay people to do nothing, they will do nothing. Got that right. Probably it'd be interesting to see him and Bernie Sanders duke it out on stage. National news here in the United States. You guys, I don't know if you saw this, but these stories are becoming all too common, sadly. from Fox News, a school sends a sheriff deputy to order a child to stop sharing Bible verses. This is from the occupied zones in the People's Democratic Republic of California that ordered a 7-year-old boy to stop handing out Bible verses during lunch. They even dispatched a deputy sheriff to the child's home to enforce the directive. Mrs. Zavala made it a practice of including Bible verses and encouraging notes in her son's lunch bag. The boy would tell his friends about the note and read them aloud at the lunch table. And it wasn't long, apparently, before children asked for copies of the notes, including a brief note to explain the daily Bible verse. Well, on April 18th, a teacher called Miss Zavala and said her son would no longer be able to share the Bible verses because he was not allowed to share such things at the school. And she was quoted as saying the deputy sheriff had been sent by the school and said the deputy went on to tell the parents that the school was worried that someone might be offended by the Bible verses. Yes, they will be offended. The gospel is offensive. They love the darkness and they hate the light. So here we are giving you a story about the success of government schools. Another testimony to homeschooling or putting your children in private Christian schools and getting them out of government schools, especially a government that is on mission to separate children from God. This one I got from Facebook, a Facebook posting that was sent over, but it's from a story, Tea Party News Network. Very interesting. Obama stuck his foot in his mouth again. And this article states that Obama has never been particularly complimentary of our veterans, but he went over the line like never before earlier this week when he said that VFW members were being confused by right-wing radio. He says, it's the story that's broadcast every day on some cable news stations. On right-wing radio, it's pumped into cars and bars and VFW halls all across America right here. He said, and this is Obama, quoting Obama, if you're hearing that story all the time, you start believing it. It's no wonder people start thinking big government is the problem. Obama said it's no wonder people start thinking big government is the problem when we've got right-wing radio being pumped into VFW halls. The national commander of the VFW fired back at him. And he's on his way out, but what is on its way in? That's something to think about, isn't it? Here's something else. Privacy in the spotlight again. And federal government overreach. FBI kept demanding email records despite the Department of Justice saying it needed a warrant. This is from The Intercept. The secret government request for customer information that Yahoo made public Wednesday revealed that the FBI is still demanding email records from companies without a warrant, despite being told by Justice Department lawyers in 2008 it doesn't have the lawful authority to do so. But they don't care because they're above the law. And the Justice Department told FBI officials that if they want to demand Americans' email records, they need a court order. It's in the Constitution, actually. It's called a warrant based on probable cause. They're still at it. Free speech, an anti-free speech law means jail and fines, even for websites. There is a piece of legislation going back to the People's Democratic Republic of California. This is an Assembly Bill 1671. The bill, already approved by the Appropriations Committee, would ban secretly recorded conversations with healthcare providers and releasing them via media or social media in any way. violators and anyone who assists them could face substantial financial penalties and jail time. The bill will ultimately provide penalties up to $10,000 and a year in jail for anyone who would not only film a confidential conversation, which has very broad definitions, with any Planned Parenthood or abortion facility or abortionist, but also anyone who distributes that footage. This is interesting that this article specifically states that you will receive jail time and penalties for specifically recording Planned Parenthood or an abortion facility or an abortionist. So the state is sanctioning the murdering of children and the exposing of illegal tactics by these murderers from any covert, investigative journalism. Special protections for one specific special group of people. That's the new America. All right, you got some updates about our disabled veteran, Joe Robertson, in Montana, who was convicted and is awaiting his sentencing for building ponds. We have more information on that from Readout News. That'll be in segment 4. So right now, Fox 519 with the Eye on the Economy. When we come back, Sam Culper from the Forward Observer magazine. This is Radio Free Readout. Don't go away.
Economic collapse could never happen again here, right? Well, think again. This week on Eye on the Economy, we break down the economic collapse taking place in Venezuela and the lessons we should be learning from it right now. Hello, everyone. This is Fox 519 here, bringing you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Readout. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. You know those mornings when you could barely move until you've had that first cup of coffee? Oh, I sure do. But you know what the worst is? Terrible, stale coffee. I hate stale coffee. That stuff in the can is the absolute worst. Now, it's part of our food storage, but imagine if you could change that. Imagine if every morning you could get up and have fresh roasted beans. How wonderful that would be. You know what? You can do that. And you can do that by going to my sponsor's website, SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. They provide great, and I mean great, coffee. Their green, unroasted, or roasted beans are perfect for your food storage needs. I do not want to imagine a future where I have to wake up every day and trudge through life with bad coffee. It may seem like a small thing in the grand scheme of them, but it'll be the little things that will help us put on our boots every day and get out there for our families. Go buy your coffee today and get it into your food storage right away. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Two sisters and an amazing coffee. SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Welcome back. And a continued thank you to our sponsor, SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Folks, I want you to know that the owners of Sisters Coffee Roasters are just like you and me. They are some great ladies. Well, I'm not a lady, but they are. And you should go out and support them and buy their coffee beans. It's an excellent product and a local Readout-owned business. Support them today, please. All right, this week we're going to talk about the practical application of what's going on in Venezuela. Folks, this is huge, and there's some major lessons to be learned here. Let's start with the first. All right, lesson number one. If you have not stored up food ahead of time, your diet can become quickly simple or non-existent during a major emergency. I feel like every week I tell you this, and it couldn't be more apparent. You've got to have food, lots and lots of food, as well as a way to grow that food. I hear many preppers and patriots alike talk about how they are almost there or, quote, almost ready with enough food. Hogwash. You can never have enough. You need to store up as much as you possibly can and then store up more. There are stories about people in Venezuela who are starving and can't get what they need. It's horrible. Don't be a victim. Okay, second lesson. When people get hungry, they become quite desperate. Some folks laugh when I tell them that the zombie apocalypse will happen when there is no food. But when people are desperate, they'll eat just about anything, including the family pets. There are more than one story coming out of Venezuela right now, everyone, about people forming hunting parties to track down cats and dogs and eat them. I've even read two stories so far about cannibalism. Two cases of the cannibalism reported by the Los Angeles Times, and whether or not it's true is still a mystery. But when the food is gone and the cats and dogs are picked clean, what's left? Folks, zombies are not made by viruses. They are made by desperation and loss of hope. They are made by people tricking their children into eating and thinking that something that they're eating is not truly what it is. I know this is a dark point in the segment, but what is happening right now, just to the south of our own country, in a country small and nice, has practical application. And I ask you this question on this point. What will happen when the EBT runs out? Next point. When the economy melts down, it just isn't the food that's in short supply. Toilet paper, soap, toothpaste, band-aids, tampon, and laundry soap are just a few items that are gone in Venezuela. Imagine today if you didn't have a way to stay clean. How would you feel? How would it affect your mindset? Imagine if your wife or daughter couldn't keep themselves clean. What does that do? Filth brings sickness and death. Not staying clean and not having clean water brings about some very serious, nasty bugs. Giardia, sepsis, and cholera, to name a few. And worse the conditions get, without clean water or clean bodies, the worse the bugs get. Leprosy, tuberculosis, and possibly even Ebola could find its way there. Without hygiene products, you're really going to be regretting not buying a few more soap bars at the dollar store, or maybe another tube or two or toothpaste. You can never have enough personal care items. Don't ever overlook this. Alright, my next point. During a currency meltdown, owning precious metals such as gold and silver becomes more important. You have heard me harp and harp and harp on this topic. Money is not the paper stuff in your wallet. It isn't the thing that says Visa or MasterCard in your purse. It's gold, silver, copper, and lead, all in that order. If you can't afford to buy gold, buy silver. If you can't afford to buy silver, which right now every should be picking up silver, it's cheap right now, go buy a box of pennies. If you can't do that, go buy a box of ammo. Metals are the only thing that consistently put people back in the game and collapse. Once they get the paper stuff again, it all goes downhill. We don't seem to learn this lesson. In fact, right now, Venezuela is even trying to ship some of their gold to Switzerland right now to see if they can get Switzerland to give them some money to get their debts paid off. But it's probably too late. All right, my last point tonight. When an economy crashes, crime goes berserk. Yes, crime goes crazy, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. When the food is gone, when hope is gone, when it seems like there will be nothing else to lose, people resort to crime. Imagine if your kids were hungry, and the local crime lord said, if you did have pounds of food, and said, go kill that guy, and he'll feed your family. What would you do? What if your wife or daughter had to turn to the oldest profession in the world to feed the brothers and sisters of the children? You don't want this. Nobody wants this. But in an economic collapse, there are things that can happen. And these things do happen. People turn to crime. People turn to prostitution, or worse. Right now, everyone, you should be studying Venezuela very, very closely, because we're going to experience this. It is a guaranteed fact. It just amazes me how quickly it all turns so bad down there. Don't be a victim. Don't be a refugee. Don't be desperate. Prepare for hard times to come. Thanks again for listening. For Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
John Jacob at RadioFreeReadout.com is how to reach me. That's my email address, and we are at RadioFreeReadout.com. This is segment two, which is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Go to SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com to learn about how you can get situated and strategically relocated into the northernmost part of the Idaho Panhandle if you are looking to move to the American Redoubt. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com. Don't forget to put on your calendar also the God and Country celebration up at Marble. Go to marblecountry.com to learn more about the God and Country celebration on June 24th through the 26th. A great family event, lots of patriot activities, self-reliant activities, vendors, booth speakers. It's just a great time. And there's one other event coming up on June 11th. The weekend of T-Rex, Pastor Sharam Hadian will be the keynote speaker at the Answering Islam Conference. That'll be in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. $10 online to get the tickets and $15 at the door, and that covers the hard costs of renting the facility. It's an all-day event from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can either go to Truth in Love Ministries, to their website, or you can go to answeringislamconference.eventgrid.com. That's Answering Islam. Just want to, I'm double checking stuff, because it really sucks to, you know, get 5 minutes into your thing and realize you forgot to hit record.
Oh, yeah. I've done that before.
Yeah, me too. That's why I look so closely at it. All right. We'll go ahead and we'll get started. If you're ready to roll, we'll roll.
All right. Ready when you are.
Okay. All right. Now, this guest, you guys are already familiar with. The senior editor of Forward Observer, Sam Culper, great patriot, a great guy, a great asset to the patriot and preparedness community. Sam Culper is the senior editor over at the Forward Observer and just released a great article, and it's very timely. It was also featured at Survival Blog. Many of you have already seen it, but this is timely because we've got this massive government disaster response exercise coming up this week, Cascadia Rising. Now, one of the components of that is a military security response. And why would they need security? Well, they're planning on a major influx of disaster refugees, a refugee crisis from people affected in the tsunami and earthquake zones along the Pacific Northwest coast of Washington and Oregon, primarily. They're expecting large numbers of citizens to be fleeing the danger and seeking food, shelter, and safety. So our government's planning for this. Now, we're pretty sensitive to this as patriots, what our government's doing, what they said they were going to be doing, what their goals are, and what they've projected their attitudes are toward patriot citizens. So when we see the military getting involved, it makes us really nervous. But we want to put this into proper perspective. And we still need to be guarded. But the title of this article is What You Need to Know About Military Assistance to Civil Disturbances. And Sam points out it's not necessarily the same thing as martial law. In fact, they're vastly different things. So, Sam, thank you so much for joining us here at Radio Free Readout.
Oh, thanks, John Jacob. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, that was a little bit of an extended introduction, but I wanted to lay the groundwork because this was a really good article, and we're, you know, in really volatile times. So when we see troops on the street, instantly our minds go, martial law, right? But that's not necessarily the same thing. There's something else. That's military assistance to civil disturbances, which is actually something that our government has the constitutional authority to do. So can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. MACDIS, it's, you know, I don't want to acronym everyone to death, but that's something we call MACDIS, military assistance to civil disturbances. And it's not the same as martial law. Martial law is ordered by the president, whereas military assistance is requested from the state. So a governor requests it, and it actually has to be approved by it goes to the Department of Justice, believe it or not, and the DOJ then advises the president on what kind of forces should be improved and how they're implemented, and then all that ultimately civilians maintain control of the MACDIS operations, even though there may be military commanders on the ground doing the, you know, the day-to-day military things.
Okay, so let's go back historically. How often has our government declared martial law?
I'm fairly certain that it's only been twice. The first time was during the Civil War, and then the on a kind of a national level. And then the second time was back during World War II. And I don't believe that it's happened since then. And martial law, I mean, it's very, very significant. You know, it's something that it certainly, had it happened in our lifetimes, we probably would remember that event very, very clearly.
Okay, now let's take a look at Hurricane Katrina and the response by the government. Oftentimes, we describe that as martial law. When the government declared martial law in New Orleans and started taking people's weapons, is that the correct term to use for that situation? Or are you saying that was not martial law?
There was a state of emergency declared. You know, I can go back and look it up. I know there was a state of emergency that was declared, and but I believe that was military assistance, not martial law. And I can go back and check that, but I did research trying to figure out where martial law has occurred, and those are the only two instances that I could find. But it's certainly something I can go back and look at again, but I don't believe that was actually martial law.
Okay. Because I know that I'm just trying to, you know, I'm an advocate for liberty, but, you know, in a major emergency disaster situation, the military is the only organization that really has the resources to respond to something as devastating as the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. You know, they got the equipment, the resources, the manpower, you know, helicopters and naval ships with, you know, lots of, you know, off-grid backup power systems and things like this. So I can see military assistance being used. I guess what people are concerned about is, where do they stand legally if they have the legal and constitutional right to use the military to offer assistance with, you know, civil situations, but then they cross the line with, we're taking all the firearms and disarming peaceful citizens and removing their ability to defend themselves, then people are easily going to perceive that as a martial law type of situation. So I know that you're dealing mostly with the intelligence side of things. And how do people make use of that in that type of a situation where they're trying to assess the threats to their family and their community? Because like in Hurricane Katrina, let's look at the threat assessment there. You're looking at gangs, roving gangs, your intelligence process as you're trying to formulate and make sense of this so you can take appropriate action. The government comes in to help, which is a good thing. And then they're disarming you. So in our minds as citizens, we want to say, look, the government has the legal right to do this, the lawful right to do this, constitutionally speaking. Just because there's military troops on our streets, this is not necessarily a bad thing. And then things turn where they are acting unconstitutionally. So then you have a new threat, I guess, to your security being injected into the scenario.
Yeah.
Help us process this.
Yeah, well, what we're dealing with is, well, let me, you know, the way I look at all this stuff, we can't time the market. We may, you know, for like a stock market crash or something like that, we can't time, you know, a nuclear attack or, you know, anything like that, or some large terrorist attack. The best that we can really do is to identify indicators that gives us potentially some early warning that an event could or is about to take place. But as far as predicting it, I don't get into that business because you're not going to be able to predict it. So what I say is the next best thing is being able to describe how that event is going to affect your community. And so let's say an EMP or, some kind of financial turmoil or a cyber attack on our grid or a cyber attack against the financial infrastructure is going to produce second and third order effects. And those are the things that we need to begin identifying is, less about the cause and more about what are people going to do in response. And this gang that we have in our town or in a neighboring town or this large metro area that we live on the outskirts on, you know, what are they, what are those individuals going to do? What are criminals going to do? What kind of problems are we going to encounter? And that really allows us to anticipate future problems and then form the mission around what's likely to happen or what we, you know, think is likely to happen instead of just saying, well, we have to prepare for all these things, and half of them are pretty unlikely. So,
yeah,
as far as that's concerned, with, you know, the recommendation I would give is, you know, do the threat analysis, sit down, list out all the threats. You know, if you want to on a strategic or national level, you know, anything that would disrupt infrastructure would be the cause. And then let's go through the list. OK, in the first 6 hours, what do we expect to happen? And after 12 hours, what are conditions going to look like? And then how are people going to respond? And we go on down the list and we identify, you know, this cascading sequence of events and effects on a community so that we can anticipate those things.
Right. Okay, so with cascading arisings on our minds, this is a very likely scenario. They're saying it's the very high probability that an earthquake, well, they say it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, but when. There's a 50% chance it could happen in the next 50 years, and it could happen as soon as it could happen tomorrow, for real. It could happen at any time now. They're saying we're overdue. So let's say this 9.0 earthquake happens, followed by a tsunami. You've got tens of thousands of people probably dead and hundreds of thousands of people with homes destroyed and displaced. What would you expect in the first 6 hours along the Pacific coast, and what should people be planning for?
Gridlock. You know, we can debate the, you know, Golden Horde and all that stuff, but you know, I really think that folks are not going to be very mobile just because of the volume of traffic trying to exit the city. You know, we look at, you know, every county should have an emergency management plan. And that's one of the requirements for them to get some funding, I believe. And so we look at, like, Atlanta, Georgia. You know, if there was anything, any catastrophic event that happened there, all inbound highways and interstates would be turned outbound. They would not allow anyone into the city. Everything's going out.
Right.
And so, yeah, look at those metro areas emergency plans and figure. I mean, that's I would imagine that's what would happen is they'd make sure all lines of drift point outward. But, you know, maybe the community, the county emergency management plan or the city will tell you exactly what they're going to do. And so the more information we have, the better conclusions that we can make. So within the first 6 hours on a 9.0, I mean, we're talking about, you know, destroyed infrastructure, no water, no power, maybe looting. You know, it's hard to say. I never have, at least never personally experienced that, but you know, maybe we can go, you know, and even the earthquakes out in California, you know, it's a different time. It's a different generation. The culture has changed. So it's difficult for me to say exactly what we can expect, also because I don't live there. So if I live there, you know, we might have a better indication of what could happen.
Well, you bring up a really good point. And it's also interesting that the very first immediate response was gridlock, because the numbers of bridges over there and built up roadside highways and landslides and things, that's one of the things that they are anticipating is the lack of mobility is going to be instantaneous and catastrophic. So you're pretty much where you are. But the one main point that you bring up with that is really good, because you place so much emphasis on patriots and preppers knowing your own community. And people should be doing this all along as they go. And you have some great resources for this. Your SHTF intelligence manual, which we're going to be giving a couple away, actually, to participants in T-Rex coming up.
Oh, great.
But yeah, we're looking forward to that. So these are great tools, but you're right. You know what gang activity you have in your community. You know who the bad people are. If you're reading the papers and following events, you know what type of meth addict issue your community may or may not have. You know, so you really do have to do your own homework to anticipate what type of opportunistic threats are going to come out of the woodwork if something happened in your neighborhood, and that's going to vary.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we can expect let's go back to military assistance for a second. You know, that might be actually a martial law. And I just looked it up, by the way. Martial law was actually not implemented during Katrina, but there was a state of emergency. The National Guard did come out in Louisiana and Mississippi. There was a lot of confusion, but there was no actual martial law that occurred there. But okay. Under military assistance, you know, we can start looking at Army bases. You know, what kind of military and law enforcement assistance might there be? How long would it take them to get there? How long would it take them to secure critical infrastructure? So, you know, if you have a hydropower plant or, you know, some building or some place of strategic importance, those places are going to be secured the first, yeah. before all other things, you know, government buildings, things like that. So,
yeah, good point.
You know, if we plot this thing on a timeline, you know, how many personnel would it take to respond to this event, and how long would it take them to get there? Where are they coming from? You know, will they be bringing National Guard troops from Utah and Montana and California, or, you know, where are these folks likely to come from?
Yeah, that's a good point, because in their pre-mission planning for Cascadia Rising, they do have National Guard from other states slated. 50,000 participants from government, non-government, Department of Defense, Canadian military, NORTHCOM, and of course, your local communities, your EOCs, the county emergency operations, the hospital staffs. 50,000 people are going to be involved in this. This is going to be pretty big. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the military assistance to civil disturbances when we come back. We're going to take a break. We are with Sam Colper, the senior editor at Forward Observer Magazine. We'll be back in a minute. Stay right there. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Greetings, Patriots. This is Chris Walsh, broker at Revolutionary Realty, located in the heart of America's Great Redoubt, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I sell land and backwoods cabins to America's Patriots every day. Creeks, springs, timber, and game, good survivable property without natural disasters. The state of Idaho has a balanced budget, and our people believe deeply in the Second Amendment. Call me today at 208-667-1776 or visit me online at www.revrealty.us. I'll be glad to serve you, and God bless America.
Going into segment three, brought to you by Katie Armor, C-A-T-I. Come and take it. Katie Armor. They have the soft armor. They have the hard plate armor, front, back, side plates, plate carriers, and lots more. Go to katiearmor.com, and they're made right here in the American Redoubt. They've got a production lead time about less than a week, and everything that you order from them ships free. And shipping is included on everything that you order from them. If you're joining us late, we are with Sam Colper, the senior editor at Forward Observer Magazine, the author of several great resources, including the SHTF Intelligence Manual. We'll be giving a couple of those away as prizes for those who are participating in Teotihuacan Readiness Exercise 2016 coming up here in just 2 weeks, June 10th through the 12th, which is coming right on the heels of Cascadia Rising, a government disaster training exercise centered around an earthquake scenario in the Pacific Northwest. Okay, Sam, we were just talking before the break. Thank you for being with us here at Radio Free Readout, by the way.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks.
Okay, now we've got this situation. We kind of jumped off. Our jump-off point was the article that you just wrote, What You Need to Know About Military Assistance to Civil Disturbances. And during the break, and you were able to look that up just to confirm, and it was two confirmed cases of the government declaring martial law, specifically martial law, not to be confused with military assistance to civil disturbances. And in the case of Hurricane Katrina, that was, in fact, a declared state of emergency, which is actually not in the Constitution. But that's another debate for another day. Let's talk about that. What are they authorized to do, constitutionally speaking? What can we expect when we see troops rolling into the streets? We're sitting in our minds. Our minds are racing, friend or foe, friend or foe. What am I up against here? There are some things that we want them to do. We expect them to do, and they have the constitutional authority to do, as long as they stay within their constitutional boundaries. One of these things is dispersing unlawful assemblies. So can you speak to that just a little bit? What would be an unlawful sure. assembly?
Sure. Well, back in the 1960s, after the Watts riot, the Army developed a plan called the Garden Plot. And it was a plan for regular Army and National Guard troops to respond to riots like that. And then the Garden Plot was written up at the Pentagon like 65 or 68, somewhere right around there. And so unlawful protest or riot, you know, unlawful, we'll put that around quotation marks. But, you know, things like we saw in Ferguson and in Baltimore, you know, tear gas, moving these, let's just call them rioters in general, you know, moving these rioters away from public buildings, moving them off the street, or, you know, moving them to a part of town where they can't cause as much damage. So, you know, we're looking at the same things we saw there, you know, armored vehicles, tear gas, riot shields. I don't think those are the things that we typically see, you know, and now with increased capabilities, you know, we are probably going to see some signals intelligence collection, trying to identify rioters potentially. Back in, I think it was during the Maidan in Ukraine, there was everyone got a text message. They sent the government worked with the cellular phone carriers, and they basically do this big bubble around where the protests were happening, and the government got the carrier to send a text message to all the people in the bubble, basically saying, "Hey, you've been identified as a rioter. Stop rioting, et cetera, et cetera."
Wow!
If that was to happen in America, I can't speak to the likelihood, but I can tell you I would not be surprised if things like that were going to happen, especially in a very violent protest riot situation.
Yeah, which we're likely to see more and more of. I mean, we just see now we've gotten to the point in our culture where people that don't like the presidential candidate are rioting and, becoming more and more violent. Things are just becoming more and more volatile in our country in general. Of course, the natural response to that is, you know, for military and law enforcement is to try to train up to meet that security threat. But the process of doing that has got a lot of people concerned, obviously. I mean, the more we move away from morality, which they don't want to use the word morality. They want to use ethics, ethical. I mean, they don't like morality. But the fact is, the farther we move from our morality, the more it necessitates heavy-handed responses. It's like creating our own monster. So we can see things like dispersing unlawful assemblies, patrolling disturbed areas, preventing the commission of unlawful acts, providing a quick reaction force. These are some of the things, categories that you mentioned. When you see these things, this is a legitimate responsive action by military forces used as civilian or civil response type situations, distributing essential goods, maintaining essential services, and establishing traffic control points. So basically, security and containment. Keep it from getting farther outside of a contained area. And now, this is something also that makes us bristle when we think of traffic control points and cordons. This makes us, in the day and age where the government is pushing further and further the constitutional limitations and breaching it, then you look at a situation like Ferguson where that is a righteous, legitimate area that you could see or incident where you can see them wanting to contain it, control the traffic flowing in and out of there, trying to looking for perpetrators that are trying to flee there and looking for their reinforcements trying to enter the area. You know, when you're dealing with, you know, thugs and looters and rioters, these things make sense. So it's like a line that's just getting more and more blurred. I guess you're starting to get into situational ethics type situations, but the military showing up isn't always necessarily a bad thing. It might be the right thing. So from our, I guess, prepper patriot perspective, how do we process this and pull that into our intelligence analysis efforts to when we're trying to determine threats, non-threats, friend or foe, what is going to impact the security, safety, and well-being of my family, my community, and then what can we do about it if they do start crossing the line? And of course, this might not be, you know, really your bailiwick when you start getting into, you know, responses, political responses to government overreach. But the bottom line is there is a legitimate use for military in civil situations. But then there's also parameters they need to be kept within. So back to my question, how do we pull that into our intelligence process? And what's the proper way to, keep that in the proper perspective in our intelligence efforts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, if there is some legitimate civil disturbance that actually poses a threat to the community, you know, like a Ferguson or like a Baltimore, then, you know, I would say the National Guard is the most likely to be mobilized and to respond, and that's for a few reasons. Number one, because the National Guard is from that area, so they know, you know, more about the area than would a regular Army component or a regular Army unit would. But, you know, they're also the civilian soldier, so that's their job as National Guardsmen to mobilize during an emergency and respond to the needs of their commander, who is the governor. Now, alongside that, we got to look at two things. What type of National Guard unit is going to be responding? MP units, MP National Guard units. You have an MP unit in your military police unit in your backyard. Hop on Google and, or, you know, do whatever security things you want to do to protect your identity. But get on the internet, get on Google or Tor, whatever you want to use, and just look up, you know, oh, the 123rd MP Company or whatever, and start reading about their training. You know, a lot of that stuff is going to be written about, especially if they're training with, the 330th MP Company out of, or maybe it might be a battalion, out in California, trained with the LA, Los Angeles Police Department.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's something that we're seeing a lot of. And so if you have an MP company that's doing a lot of training, then that's a very good indicator that that's going to be their job during response. So then we start looking at, okay, well, how many people are in this detachment or this company, this battalion? Who's their commander? Does he have 5 tours to Iraq and Afghanistan or 0 tours? Because we're talking about capability and leadership. That's going to greatly determine, the level of experience this company has in deployments.
It could also be an indicator of what type of courses of action he might be, you know, advocating for. I mean, done 5 tours in Iraq, chances are he may be real comfortable with kicking every door in a city block.
Yeah, and also that too also depends on what type of mission they had. You know, if they're at a prison versus, you know, running traffic control points.
Right.
And, you know, along the lines of the traffic control, you know, a lot of that stuff, like what we did in Baghdad during that insurgency, it goes back to David Kilcullen. He's an Australian Army officer and counterinsurgency strategist and advisor to General Petraeus. And he said, in the case of Baghdad, that you have to kill a city in order to save it. And so what he means by that is you have to slowly, you know, all the equipment and material that goes to support an urban insurgency has to be starved out of there, which is why you have checkpoints, searching vehicles for contraband, and no one comes in and no one goes out you know, unless they have no contraband. And so that's something that I would also expect to see, you know, if there was, you know, violence, if there were firearms involved, then, you know, in a scenario like that, they certainly would be screening the local populace for contraband like firearms and paraphernalia, propaganda, whatever it might be.
Yeah, that's definitely something that you would want to expect. What advice would you have for the patriot, for the prepper, in this type of a situation, major disaster type situation? You're able to get out of the area. Or let's say you can't get out of the area. Just look, two different groups there. Some are going to be trapped there, and some are going to be able to make it out, or they'll already be outside of that kind of a inaccessible area along the coast. For those that are inside the area, what should they be focusing on as far as assessing threats and preparing for those threats that they might be facing?
Well, if you can find a copy, go back and get a copy of A Failure of Civility. So first of all, you need a good, strong, defensible position. You need buy-in from your neighbors or wherever you're going. You know, it's going to take a village to provide community security. And I would say those are the top two prerequisites for surviving in this kind of turmoil. As far as from an intelligence standpoint, we got to start getting threat streams, you know, flows of intelligence information coming into our ACE, our ACE analysis and control element. And so we can do that through SIGINT, through monitoring local communications. We can get out of software to find radio if there's power, auxiliary or regular commercial power. You know, we can look at the radio frequency spectrum and start to finding the spikes where people are communicating and listening in. So after we get information, whether it's through human sources or signals intelligence or open source intelligence, things like the news or the other resources out there, we need to start plotting these events on a map. So if we're listening to a police scanner and there's robberies or there's fighting, well, let's hop on our map and overlay. And whenever there's an event, let's put it on our map so that we can get an accurate picture of security. And maybe on one road out, well, this is all very, very hypothetical, but
sure.
Maybe we're seeing one part of town is very violent, lots of stuff going on, and very little events or significant activity going on in another part of town. You know, that may indicate that part of town is safer or more well defended. And so that may be one place we want to, you know, network with and
absolutely,
or go, or maybe there's a road that we can take that there's been no reporting on it. So maybe it's a safe route out of the city. But battle tracking, we got to battle track this stuff because our line of sight is extremely limited. So the more information we can get about the security picture outside of our immediate area, the better off we're going to be. And also, if threats are migrating, so if we have out-of-area people, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we call them, you know, if they're going from one city to another.
You called them what? You broke up there.
Oh, sorry. Out-of-area fighters or, you know, out-of-area rioters.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, so some folks that are coming from a neighboring city, you know, we're plotting these events on a map. So over a period of hours or a period of days, we're slowly starting to see things creep closer to our area. Well, that's a great early warning. It's saying, look, at this rate, you know, tomorrow afternoon, we're going to start seeing these kinds of problems. So we're in 5 or 10 minutes, we're going to start seeing these problems in our community. And that's an invaluable thing. And if you don't battle track that stuff, you're not going to get that kind of warning.
Yeah. And it's really hard to battle track without communications. And it's interesting also that you brought up software-defined radio, because that's something that I know a lot of Amron Core operators are working with, a lot of Amron operators. But that is a great resource, and we're going to be covering more of that over at Amron and Partisan Radio. That's a whole nother world, but you can't battle track if you don't have information coming in, and if you don't have runners coming into the perimeter telling you what's going on out there. You either have to go out there yourself and get it, or you have to monitor what's happening on the airwaves. And communications and intelligence, they're joined at the hip, like I say.
Certainly are.
So, all right. Well, I thank you, sir. Do you have anything else that you want to throw out there? And oh, could you also get your website and all the information out there where people can go to learn more about the intelligence process, how it affects them, and how they can use it for their communities, for their families, or their groups?
Yeah, sure. Why don't I do this? I'll email you. So there's a we did a webinar last year. I don't know, it's over an hour long, about intelligence preparation of the community and all the pieces that we need to be collecting for this puzzle. All the things, all the homework we can be doing now to make our lives easier and safer in the future. So I can send you that link, and if you want to put it somewhere, or you know, whatever, you know, that's, it's free on our website.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you can go to readfomag.com. That's readfomag. We do have a subscription service, so we write about threats that we see. We're developing some early warning indicators that we're going to be writing about, and we also have 7 hours of webinars and videos up that talk about intelligence and talk about, you know, how we collect it and what it is and how do we use it, and that's on our website. So if you know folks want to subscribe with us, we would appreciate the support. But more than that, you know, they'd be learning all these things that frankly most people don't know.
Yeah, it's a great resource. Forward Observer Magazine, excellent, right up there at the top of my list, and I can't recommend it enough. It's just a great resource. You've done a great job for years, and it's much appreciated. Thank you for what you do.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad to do it.
All right. Okay, this is Sam Culper from Forward Observer Magazine. I want to thank you for your time. You're doing a great job. Keep up the great work, and we're looking forward to getting a couple of those resources, the SHTF Intelligence Manual, in some people's hands there in the audience come T-Rex time. So thank you, sir.
Well, fantastic. Yep.
All right, we'll keep
thank you for the opportunity. I'm glad to help out, and thanks for doing what you do.
Absolutely. We'll definitely stay in touch, and God bless, be safe, and we'll be in contact.
All right, you too, John Jacob. Thanks.
All right. Whatever happened to the fear of God? Whatever happened to church on Sunday? Whatever happened to the velvet glove and the iron fist? Good old-fashioned brutality. Everything in its place. How safe is your property? How long could it sustain you? Have you considered how you might deal with various threats? Have you planned out your property to get the most out of it for secure and self-reliant living? Those are the questions that Strategic Landscape Design answers. Their services include planning for the primary needs of water, food, energy, and self-defense, providing consulting and design services to help fellow patriots achieve a prepared lifestyle. Take the next step in making yours a secure and productive self-sufficient property. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. What is a rhino? Well, in modern political terms, it means Republican in name only. But in truth, both parties have them. They're opportunists, and they are everywhere. It's good to know who's who. An opportunist is a person who is beholden to compromise and not principle, who says one thing but does another. It's a person who won't take a pledge in writing because they say it's a gimmick. It's a person who campaigns on pro-business conservatism, but behind the scenes takes thousands from the pro-gas tax lobby and labor unions, including SEIU, who championed Obamacare. It's a person who says they're out to help every man, but can only do so by raising taxes. Over the past 6 years in Olympia, I've done what I said I was going to do, and that's make lower taxes, less government, and more freedom a reality in Olympia. Actions speak louder than words, at least that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Community Look, Matt Shea, Republican.
Segment 4, the fourth and final segment for episode 1623 here at Radio Free Redoubt. This segment is brought to you by Werkz Holsters, WERKZ.com, an American Redoubt-owned business, Patriot-owned business, custom-made Kydex holsters. with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And don't forget to use the coupon code RFR on your next order, works.com. Now, tomorrow I will be putting up Partisan Radio. Instructions and additional guidance on participating in T-Rex. Last week I talked about Cascadia Rising mostly. So tomorrow in the next Partisan Radio, it will mostly be centered around T-Rex. What to do, what you can expect. We're going to talk about some of the prizes, and I'm going to be doing some videos too of some of those prizes. Did some videos this week that uploaded three videos in the last week for our YouTube channel, Radio Free Readout YouTube channel, talking about comms gear, antennas, software-defined radio, and our Black Echo 01 station. I want to thank those of you who stepped forward to pledge. We talked about and I introduced the Poly 01 Fund to help with the cost to be able to keep her working in that position full time. And we needed $500 a month, and we have $40 pledged. We needed $500 a month, and well, we still do. And we have $40 a month pledged. So thank you guys for stepping up. Thank you guys for contributing to help Radio Free Readout grow, continue to grow as the costs continue to rise as we expand and grow. It's unavoidable. I want to give you an update with Joe Robertson over in Montana, 77-year-old disabled veteran who was found guilty of damaging U.S. waters and contaminating them. The EPA, of all people, who knowingly put contaminants in the Colorado River causing irretrievable damage. Oops, no one's held accountable. I'm not even aware of anyone getting demoted. They just do some damage control press releases and that's it. You've got a guy building ponds, which he's perfectly within his legal rights, who did not even commit the violations that they're claiming. The authority that they're claiming to go after him under doesn't even fall within the purview of what they have the jurisdiction over. There was an engineering firm, Ray Cagle, who owns it's Cagle and something else. But basically they do, you know, environmental study group. He says Joe Robertson's been wronged by the federal government. Once he found out about Joe Robertson's plight, he, at his own expense, pro bono, went to do a study to determine whether or not he had caused the contamination of any navigable waters or any waters at all. And as it turns out, he had not. He said, I just couldn't imagine that nearly 78-year-old guy facing 15 years in prison. This is what Cagle says. And by the way, he's a former Army Corps of Engineer specialist, worker, engineer. He says, I wanted to see how bad it was. The public defender wouldn't volunteer any information about the case. He wouldn't volunteer the severity of the environmental impact or how large the alleged violation was or anything. So he offered to travel to Montana, conduct a study of the environmental impact, because that's what he does. That's what his business does. And the charges against Robertson, all at no cost to the disabled veteran. Completely pro bono, Cagle did warn Robertson that the study could result in favor of the EPA. Robertson was willing to take that chance, as he still didn't believe that he had done anything wrong. So Cagle says he's going to do this objectively. He says, we are scientists, not politicians. We just report our findings, just the facts, right? So Cagle, along with his business partner and wife, Dr. Susan Cagle, spent a weekend on Joe Robertson's mountain. He said, we didn't see any evidence of what would be considered measurable environmental degradation or damage whatsoever. We also determined, in our professional opinion, that the area in which he built these little ponds are not subject to the Clean Water Act and don't even require a 404 permit. When the size of the impact is so small, about 1/10 of an acre total for all 9 stock ponds, and the fact that they were stock ponds, there is no requirement for 404 permits. And he did have a county permit. It doesn't require the need to compensate under the Clean Water Act either. So if Mr. Robertson put some dirt or sand in the creek for it to have significant nexus, according to the Justice Kennedy of the Supreme Court, Cagle clarifies, that means that little pollutant, that dirt, would have to have significant effect on all three things, physical, chemical, and biological integrity of the Jefferson River 60 miles away, which it did not. He said that would be impossible. It's not even plausible. And it is not continuous. This creek, they say he put contaminants in, goes underground. So there again, it falls outside of the requirements because there's no continuous flow of that water from the point where they said it was contaminated to the river. So anyway, people are going to bat for Joe Robertson. We are. Readout News is. Several elected officials are. And we want to get the word out. We want you guys to call, you, those of you listening in Montana, contact your elected officials to put pressure on these people. And we're working on this. His lawyer buried this report that they did pro bono. He says, I don't think it'll help. Wouldn't even admit it. It's just sick. Sick and wrong. All right, I'm going to wrap up here, guys, but I want to tell you about a couple things. There's a Liberty Tree Gun and Preparedness Expo coming up in Yakima on the weekend of Father's Day. What, 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th in Yakima. We did this last year, and it was a large gun expo. This year is going to be a gun and preparedness expo. Several speakers, widely known speakers, food, camping, classes, just a lot going on. A lot of you guys are already aware of that. Some of you are heading over for that. There is a very nominal fee to get in, but Cope Reynolds, you guys know Cope Reynolds from Southwest Shooting Authority. He's going to be teaching there in that area June 21st from around, 8 o'clock until sometime in the afternoon. But anyway, get signed up. If you want to go through that course, it's the Counter-Strike course. And we'll post some links to that on our Highlights and Resources posting. There's a direct link to sign up for that. And over in Marble, he's going to have a three-day class, Personal Defense Handgun 3. It is an exhaustive, comprehensive personal defense handgun course. A three-day course with a night shoot in Marble, Washington that weekend. So we're going to get the links up there for you guys to be able to check that out and sign up for that. Great skills to be able to build on. And they have a coupon code in there too to get a discount. There is a time limit on those coupon codes, so you want to jump on that right away. There's one thing I want to mention too here. The expansion of the new 96.5 KTW FM. This was really cool because we've got D-Day, the remembrance of D-Day. So to open up their new radio station, the KTW station, to expand, they're adding another radio station, 96.5. They are commemorating D-Day by broadcasting starting at 2 p.m. today, Sunday afternoon. That's what's going to be that's what opened up the air. I listened to it for a little while I was working on the show as a way to dedicate the program to honor our military, especially those who landed on the beaches of France on D-Day. It's General Dwight D. Eisenhower. It's like a two-hour. Let me just read this to you. You will hear General Dwight Eisenhower call the military operation a crusade in which we will accept nothing less than a full victory. More than 5,000 ships and 13,000 aircraft supported the D-Day invasion. And by day's end, the Allies gained a foothold in continental Europe. The cost in lives on D-Day was high. More than 9,000 Allied soldiers were killed or wounded, but their sacrifice allowed more than 100,000 soldiers to begin the slow, hard, long slog across Europe to defeat Adolf Hitler's crack troops. You will hear the recordings of the news reports as heard live by our grandparents on June 6th, 1944. That's tomorrow. Later in the broadcast, KTWFM will feature interviews with veterans who were part of the Greatest Generation. The program will also be heard on KTW 630 AM and streamed live to the nation on Liberty Broadcasting Service System. So very cool. And we also, I spoke with the station director, Tom Reed, and we're going to get the audio of that. So we'll have that in our archives as well. We'll be able to air that for you guys on Radio Free Redoubt. Looking forward to that. Okay, guys, that wraps up this week. So you have a blessed week and get your comms up. Get ready to do some training, your grid down training with your family, your community, and your group, your church. And get ready to tune in, because we're going to be putting information out there on the Ameron nets to help you stay informed in case of a disaster grid down situation. It's your time to practice. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. More on that in Partisan Radio tomorrow. This is Radio Free Redoubt. I'm John Jacob Schmidt. Good night.